Chapter 7. This Leprous Womb. Zephon. He woke in the quiet dark, and as awakenings went, it was an unpleasant one. Transhumans of the Legionis Astartes usually came up clean and swift, a synaptic jerk into full consciousness. This was different. This was less an awakening from slumber, more a reclamation of awareness, dredged from the depths of a coma. For want of any other option, he lay there on his back, watching the low-powered lights flickering above him and listening to the beat of his two hearts. One was slow and regular, the other beat only once every 10 seconds or so, its chambers held in reserve for moments of extreme exertion. Beneath those drums, his armour was an active thrum, purring on low power. When he tried to call out, his voice emerged as a drawl, thick with disuse.
"They've ranged the main line,"
he said to the flickering illumination globes above.
"You cannot stay here."
He hadn't meant to say that. He didn't know why he'd said it or what it meant. A voice he didn't recognize said a name he didn't know. He couldn't see who it was. He still couldn't even turn his head. And he tried to say this, to tell the speaker he didn't understand what was happening. But again, the words came out wrong.
"The foe is close to the outwork line. Artillery. If our war guns are firing, so are theirs. We both possess weapons of great range. Why are you here? You are not militia."
The other voice returned, as calm as before. This time it conveyed more than a name.
"Interesting," it said,
coming with a speaker crackle that made it tinny and weak. A human voice, though.
"Remnant memories. Perhaps the very last words, pre-Acedia."
"They have ranged the main line,"
he said again. It felt vile speaking those words, like someone had their fingers inside his throat, pushing the muscles to make the wrong sounds. He wanted to shout, to free his throat of the blockage of bizarre words, but he feared his cry would come out calmly as, "They have ranged the main line. You cannot stay here."
"Listen to me," the other voice continued. "You do hear me, yes?"
"Yes," he tried to say. "Yes, I hear you."
"They have ranged the main line," he said instead.
"Have they indeed?" replied the voice. "As fascinating as your pre-stasis murmurings are, and this is very much not the time for such considerations, I must extricate you from the leprous womb of your rebirth. Now, make a fist. Can you do that?"
He made a fist. At least, he thought he did.
"Good," said the voice. "Good. Now open your eyes again."
He hadn't realized he'd closed them. He opened them. They were gummy, his vision unclear. He tried to say this, too, and failed again.
"They have ranged the..."
"Sacred Mars, shut up,"
the voice sighed. And then, in a mumble,
"Perhaps they were right about the brain damage."
Other voices joined in now, murmuring in similar concern.
"We must attend him,"
one of them said.
"By all means," replied the first. "Perform your function."
"Lord..."
This new voice was far gentler.
"Lord, it is Shafir. I am with you. We are all with you. Can you open your eyes for me, Master?"
He opened them yet again. A blurry figure was leaning over him, its features indiscernible. There was a spraying sound, the tingle of moisture cold on his face, the drag of a cloth around the edges of his eyes. It helped a little. The figure moved away, and the ceiling resolved into clarity above him. The sight brought no enlightenment, because what he was seeing made no sense.
"How,"
he said,
"how can metal rot?"
None of the voices chose to answer that. He heard several figures moving around him in the half-dark, heard their shuffling steps and the pneumatic whine of bionic replacements. He heard the strangers breathing, their respirations slow, calm, yet somehow forced. These were sounds he recognized. That was how servitors moved, how they breathed.
"Master, can you sit up?"
He rose, armor joints growling. And that's when the pain started, a sickening flare in the back of his head. Pain he could deal with. The dizziness and queasiness was somewhat less welcome. Nausea was rare for his kind. Astartes were engineered to be above such mortal flaws. He moved slowly, lifting himself on limbs that purred with the smooth function of exquisite bionics. As the sickness faded, he looked at his hands, seeing palms and fingers of polished metal, feeling them hum with the silken joy of augmetic perfection. Both of his arms were bionic, as was one of his legs. Not the crude and functional replacements of Legion warfare, but beautiful, artisanal bionics shaped and nerve-sensed like human limbs. They didn't feel false. They felt like his hands, his arms, his leg. They felt natural.
"I can sheathe them in skin, you know,"
said the first voice, somewhere out of sight.
"It would be an achievement of artistry, covering your bionics in cloned flesh. In a way, rather tempting. Not that there's time for such a thing now."
Zephon lowered his silver hands. Chemical feeds were jabbed into his chest and thighs, through sockets in the armour, intravenously flooding his system with fluids from a steel tank buckled to the side of his surgical slab. Now that he was sitting up, he felt strength returning, and clarity of thought with it. It was slow, though, a reluctant return. The room around him was infected somehow, corroded not by rust and natural ruin, but malformed by abscesses. Veins bulged, hideously ripe inside the metal. Many of them bled a wet blackness that moved, nothing like oil, and smelled like diseased blood. He was in a Medicaid chamber, one that was far from empty, populated almost exclusively by the dead. Men and women in war-torn uniforms lay silent on cots and surgical slabs. From the way they were bloating, most had been dead several days, yet a covering of dust coated all of them in shrouds of fine powder, as though they'd lain there for months. The ceiling and iron support beams were riven by corrosion. They looked decayed, their ruination impossibly biological. Stasis pods lined the walls, some open and empty, others with the slumbering shapes of Astartes warriors in a state of suspended animation. Several of the pods, still with power, emitted weak blue light onto their blood-stained cushioning. The true smell hit him then. The smell of several hundred people left for dead and slowly splitting open as their organic processes broke them down. It made the pain flare again in the back of his head.
"What happened here?" he asked.
"It's still happening,"
the first voice snapped, as if that of all questions was somehow a bridge too far.
"You may address your prayers of thanks to the Omnisire that I found you before it was too late."
He looked around as his vision continued to clear. His surgical slab was ringed by several saviours, some of them human, some of them servitors. The latter stood with slack jaws and dull eyes. They were a ragged pack in filthy jumpsuits, their heads scarred and tattooed with incarceration codes. Each one of them displayed crude installations of bionic punishment. Arms were replaced by metal claws, or the bulky weight of heavy bolters. Spines were threaded through with muscle cable, scratched red lenses stirred out in place of eyes. One of them was drooling down her chin and making the same repetitive murmur to herself, a nonsense syllable she mumbled over and over. The others stood quietly, not quite silently, as breath was forced in and out of their bodies by their brutal, simple cybernetic implants. The humans, though, he knew them at once. Shafir, devoted Shafir, in her shawl of Legion red. Orestes, clad in monkish robes, dyed the same familiar crimson. And Shenkai, looking as exhausted as his parents, with his dark eyes narrowed and shadowed by a raised hood.
"We are overjoyed to see you, Lord," said Orestes.
They did not look overjoyed, Zephon noted. They looked afraid.
"It is good to see the three of you."
Until recently, this would have been a lie, spoken out of politeness, or more likely not spoken at all. When he'd been exiled to Terra as part of the Crusader host, the presence of his armory thralls did nothing but remind him that he would never fight again. He was the crippled captain, the invalid angel. What use were Arsenal's servants to him? Lan's augmetic gifts had changed that. First the ad hoc surgeries that allowed him to fight in the webway, then the more intensive augmentation that followed, restoring him to primacy. Zephon regarded his servants and the servitors accompanying them. Two of the servitors stood either side of him, one managing the chemical feeds plugged into his armor sockets, the other gazing dead-eyed at a handheld Auspex scanner, clutched awkwardly in its gloved hand. Ignoring the servitors for a moment, he looked at the tank of chemicals being used, at the runic markings on its metal side. All of this, the chemical ritual taking place, re-knit the frayed edges of his memory. He'd seen this before. He knew what it meant.
"Why are they doing this?" he asked.
There was a pause in the wake of that question. His thralls didn't answer, but the first voice did, sounding concerned.
"They're reactivating you from Astartesian stasis, flooding you with the chemical purges necessary to flush out the toxins of suspended animation. That should be obvious, even with your disorientation."
"You misunderstand me," Zephon said. "I am aware of the process. But why are they doing this? Why servitors? Why not Legion apothecaries?"
"Because most of your Legion's apothecaries are dead. Most of everyone is dead."
Something in the voice's tone tendrilled through his mind, kindling more memories along the way. He saw a face, an old face, the expression dismissive and disgusted. Yes, the last of the fog was lifting now. A name came to him.
"Where are you, Arkan? I cannot see you."
The buzz of a cheap, scratchy anti-grav system sounded above. A servo skull descended with a quivering lack of grace, the polished bone implanted with sensoria needle clusters in the eye sockets, and its jaw replaced with a dented vox speaker.
"The fundaments of memory seem intact,"
the skull noted in its crackling tone. Red lights blinked at the tips of its sensor needles.
"You know me, at least. And presumably these three slaves?"
"They are not slaves,"
Zephon said at once.
"Yes, they are, and we're not going to argue about it. Do you know your own name?"
The warrior felt a flicker of discomfort. He actually had to think about it for a moment, nor was he blind to the worried glances passing between his thralls.
"Zephon," he said, "Dominion of the Blood Angels, Exarch of the High Host. My brothers know me as the Bringer of Sorrow."
The voice, Arkan Land, barked a nasty little laugh.
"Astartes dramatics. It isn't enough for all of you to set the galaxy aflame. You also have to insist you're heroes for doing it. Worthy of titles everyone else finds ridiculous."
The waking warrior showed no temper at the old man's attitude. Somehow the disrespect felt familiar and ignorable.
"Master."
This was Shafir, foremost of his servants.
"Can you stand?"
Zephon took a breath, looked around the blighted chamber once more.
"Not yet. Sensation is returning, though. I confess I do not understand what I am seeing here. What is this place of horrors?"
"Allow me,"
said Arkan Land in his crackling tone. The servo skull clicked several times, and a spillage of blue light streamed from the skull's left eye. A degraded hololith took shape of a skinny old man in tattered robes, hovering several inches off the blood-stained floor tiles. Even in the poor-quality hollow, Land looked some way past weary, deep into a new level of exhaustion. His face was gaunt, his skin grimy. He had a tremor in one of his knuckly hands.
"You look well, my friend," Zephon lied softly.
"Oh, do shut up," Land sneered. "As to your location, you're in one of the Medicae sepulchres of Razavi Bastion, down in the catacombs. It's where they stored you with who knows how many other dead, wounded and stasis-bound. and they told me you were either dead or terminally brain damaged, which in the case of your transhuman breed amounts to much the same thing. Reports conflicted on the matter. I decided to see for myself. You were supposed to be in storage at Bab. It's taken me forever to find you.
Zephon didn't like the phrasing of being in storage, but now wasn't the time to debate it. He raised a hand to slow Arkan's diatribe, to bid him speak slower, but the Martian wouldn't be stopped. The skull continued transmitting Lan's voice a half second out of time with the hollow's movements.
The subterranean levels have already been abandoned, and the surface levels are being prepared for evacuation. I gathered your menials here and sent a team down to find you. Against all good reason, I might add.
Nothing Land was saying made sense. For the defenders to be evacuating Rezavi Bastion, the enemy must have...
Arkan, he said to the flickering hollow. The ultimate wall has fallen. Truly.
The Martian's smile was anything but pleasant.
It's riddled with holes. The War Master's horde is advancing across the districts of the Inner Palace.
Zephon's armour hummed in the silence that followed.
Master, said Aristides gently.
Zephon could see he was trying to conceal his urgency.
Can you stand yet?
It was a trial to force himself to his feet. Servos in his hips and knees rolled smoothly, but his strength was taking its time to return. Seeing his weapons strapped to Shenkai's back in a buckled grav harness brought a relief that bordered on profound. Something like hunger rushed through him as he rose, awakening with the restoration of consciousness and motion. It turned his tongue to leather. He felt it in his parched veins, as if every process inside his body cried out for lubricant. It was a thirst beyond dehydration.
I am bloodless, he thought. I am desiccated. A husk. How can they not see it?
But they couldn't. There was evidently nothing to see. All three of his thralls closed in on him, examining his bionics, poking at the damage to his warplate, sealing the cracks with smears of armour cement. Zephon had never felt the blood need descend outside of battle. There it was a pressure, an internal enemy to be resisted through willpower. Here, in the dark, it biled up into his throat and threatened to choke him. The beat of his thralls' hearts was strangely lovely, forming a hypnotic, sodden percussion.
Lord, someone was saying.
Interesting,
someone else was saying.
Interesting.
Zephon breathed through parted teeth, refocusing.
I need you to tell me all that has transpired, he said to Arkan Land.
The hollow ghost shook its head.
I'm not going to detail every loss we've suffered since your injury. The war would be over before I was halfway down the list of disasters.
Then summarize. I need information, Arkan.
There was a pause. For a moment, Zephon was sure Lan's petulance would win out. Thankfully, he was wrong.
You were wounded at Gorgon Bar. Your Susan membrane forced you into a Starcesian stasis as a trauma reaction to the organ failures, the cranial rupture, the hemorrhaging.
Zephon was unsteady, but he felt fine, at least in terms of recovering from whatever wounds he'd sustained in the fire bright enough to blind him. Heat so hot it possessed its own searing sound. The unreal thunder of falling rocks, the wounds he'd sustained in the explosion.
I remember, he said. I remember Gorgon Bar.
Well, everything after that has gone supremely poorly. They've swarmed the Inner Palace. Almost everything has fallen except the Palatine Ring. Sidoni Bastion, Meru, Sheol, all gone. The last we heard of Pythia and Avalon Bastions, they were close to breaking. Bab and the others still hold, but each one is besieged by the Horde, their forces surrounded. The fourth Primarch is encircled at Bab Bastion, trapped there.
The fourth Primarch. Zephon felt a surge of irritation, but it was thin and weak. It didn't override the dry vein hunger.
Say his name, said the Blood Angel. Say Rogal Dawn.
As I said, Lan continued without missing a beat, the fourth Primarch and the bastions that aren't already in ruins are being overrun or abandoned as we speak. Everything in the inner palace is decaying, or infected, or rotting, or mutating, or cancerous. We fall back as swiftly as we can, staying ahead of the foulness. You don't know what it's like out there, Zephon.
Master, Orestes interrupted without bothering to look over at Lan's hologhost. We must examine your range of motion. Zephon nodded permission, his attention remaining on Lan as he systematically tensed and relaxed his muscles, biological and bionic alike. He rolled his shoulders and stretched his arms. Armour joints revved and tendons crackled in the stinking dark. Orestes, his assessor of physicality, paid rapt attention, studying for soreness, stiffness, for any flaws at all. What little light there was flashed from the silver of his cybernetic limbs. Despite the damage to them, the scratches and dents they'd suffered in the rock slide at Gorgon Bar, they were exquisitely wrought. The Martian had engineered them himself to replace the Blood Angel's failing bionics. It was all coming back to him now, the good and the bad. They have ranged the main line. Why are you here? You are not militia? He'd confronted a civilian just as the shelling began, and he'd shielded her, embracing her as the building came down upon them, warding her body with his own. There was a civilian at Gorgon Bar, he murmured. The artillery. I tried to save her.
Really?
Lan sounded far from fascinated.
What a thrilling story.
Her name was Keris Gon, one of the Praetorians' new interrogators. Do you know if she survived the explosion?
Not only do I not know, I also don't much care. You're welcome, by the way. You'd be dead were it not for the archaeological fortune in Dark Age nanotech and artisanal bionics I used to repair your brainstem and central nervous system all those months ago. Their regenerative capabilities are admittedly crude and of dubious legality, but it was enough to prevent you hemorrhaging to death from an excruciating brain bleed.
Dark Age. Zephon hesitated. That is a lot to process, to be thrown so casually into conversation.
I think you meant to say, thank you, Arkan. Your legendary generosity has paid off yet again.
Zephon took a breath, fixing the hologhost with a gentle stare.
I said exactly what I meant.
As ever, Zephon, your achingly soulful sincerity is a tedium I've neither the time nor the patience to deal with. I trust with this saving of your life my debt to you is discharged. Besides, he added sniffily, there's no component in any of my work that isn't entirely safe and entirely within the realms of my understanding.
That is comforting to know, Zephon replied, somewhat.
Yes. Well, as I said, you're welcome. Now, please get up and get out of there.
All seems in order, Orestes said, still circling, still overseeing the process.
He watched as the servitors at Lan's command pulled the chemical feeds from Zephon's armor sockets. The Blood Angel dragged his fingers through his long hair, gathering it in a knot behind his head to keep it from his face. He did it carefully, aware of the pain throbbing all the while at the back of his skull. His hands came away unbloodied. That was something, at least. He could remember everything now. Every hour of the war, every minute of fighting and falling back, fighting and withdrawing. And he had the guiltiest feeling, just for a moment, that ignorance had been bliss. An unworthy thought for a warrior, let alone an angel of Baal. But there it was.
How fares my legion? Where is the Primarch?
We do not know, Lord,
Shafir demurred.
There has been no reliable word of the Emperor's angel.
A handful of your legion kinsmen still live, Land added. But as far as that genetic mutant you call a father, I'm afraid I've no idea.
The family of thralls tensed at the disrespect, which, of course, Arkan Land ignored entirely.
The 12th Primarch hunts the 9th. That's all we know. And we only know that because the ground shakes when he screams the 9th's name across the sky. Your beloved Pater may already be dead, Zephon. And if the 9th has any sense, it's hiding from the 12th. Best to put it out of your mind for now.
In the wake of those words, which might have seen Land killed by some members of the 9th Legion, Zephon stared into the old man's hololithic eyes.
You look tired, Harkon.
Ah, sighed the Martian. You have no idea.
Zephon rose and took the Auspex from the servitor's grip, activating it and passing it over his body in a slow sweep. The model was just a crude battlefield pattern, but it served its purpose as a Medicaid reader. When he passed it over his head, it pulsed a warning tone immediately. Flashing runes detailed sealed skull fracturing, potential cranial nerve damage and scarring of brain tissue. It couldn't be more specific. The Auspex was too crude a model for that level of accuracy. A glance at Aristides told Zephon that his assessor thrall had already conducted the same scan, with the same results. He'd been fortunate, that much was clear. His injuries would have killed a human outright, but his genhanced body had shut down into the healing sleep prized by his kind at their most grievously wounded. With his life function slowed, his implanted organs had been granted the time they needed to heal, seal, and scar over the worst of the damage. More than likely, an apothecary or Medicaid had toiled over him while he was in Susan as well. Then there were Land's implanted treasures to consider. The compensatory surgeries performed after their disastrous excursion into the webway. Zephon shivered. He looked over the rows of stasis pods, seeing 100 in this chamber alone. 32 of them were sealed and occupied.
There are other legionaries in stasis down here. I cannot leave them. They will be killed in their sleep.
The hollow ghost looked at him as if he'd sprouted horns and started speaking in tongues.
People die in war, Zephon. It's pathetic that an Astartes should need reminding of that.
I cannot abandon my brothers.
No, then you'll die down there with them. Most of them are already dead. They're stored here for gene seed harvest, not because they'll be capering around after surgical recoveries.
I'm not blind, Arkan. I can read the stasis coffin displays. Some of them are alive. With surgery, they will awaken from suspended animation. They will live.
You realize your own legion has abandoned these unfortunates?
My brothers would never do such a thing.
Land laughed at the denial.
The war has moved on, Zephon. Every one of your kind still breathing is out there in the dust, fighting for his life. And do you think the loyal legions have the warriors to spare for something like this? To blindly push stretchers and gurneys over kilometres of no man's land? I didn't send servitors and slaves down into the dark for you because they were the best souls for the purpose. I did it because there was no one else to send. Everyone else is out there fighting, dying, or already dead.
Zephon stood by one of the pods, looking in at the somnolent figure. He didn't recognise the warrior's face, though the pod was marked with the Enochian runes of his legion, and the figure wore Blood Angel's armour. The corruption eating at the walls had started its work on the slumbering Astartes, blackening the left side of his body, twisting it with supernatural rancidity.
Zephon, enough! There's no time for your sentimental frippery. If you can move, you need to get out of there. I've lost a great many servitors even reaching you. The sub-levels are overrun with exoplanar mutation.
Sensing it was time, Shenkai reverently turned his back upon his master. Cradled in the straps of the grav harness on his back were the tools of Zephon's trade. His sheathed power sword, his bolt gun, his pistols. Even one of the weapons would be a burden beyond easy human capacity. But the harness Shenkai wore lightened the load to tolerable levels. Zephon didn't reach for them right away.
Shafir?
He asked Shenkai's mother. She was his weapon-bearer. The grav harness was hers to wear, and the weapons were her honour to bear. Shafir managed a slight smile.
It was time, Lord. perhaps even past time.
Now that it was spoken, Zephon couldn't miss seeing it. Orestes and Shafir were getting old. He'd paid his servants almost no heed since they came with him to Terra years before, and age showed at the corners of their eyes, the thinning of their hair, and a dozen other ways that Zephon's kind instinctively overlooked as beneath their notice. Their son Shenkai was, what, close to 25? Perhaps even 30? The muscles of hard training showed beneath his red clothes. Clearly he was ready. Zephon probably should have elevated Shenkai half a decade ago.
"Thank you, Shenkai," he said to his new weapon-bearer.
He drew his blade slowly, leaving the scabbard bound to the thrall's back. With his free hand, he reached for one of his pistols. The weapons were clean, repaired, perfectly maintained. He'd expected no less.
"This is all very touching," said Land. "But please hurry. You're the only living beings down there, but not the only things moving."
It had not been a swift escape. Rezavi Bastion in its entirety was the size of a township, and much of its scale was beneath the earth in the form of elaborate catacombs. The Emperor had wrested it from a techno-barbarian warrior queen in the Unification Wars, and the Imperium had done what the Imperium did best, annihilating all traces of the previous owners and reclaiming what was useful for their own purposes. Dozens of kilometres of tunnels and chambers comprised the fortress's underground levels. Zephon had never been this deep, not while conscious at least, so he followed Lan's drifting servo skull through the subterranean halls. The servitors hadn't followed, even when Zephon had beckoned them.
"Let them die down here," Lan had said,
his projected image wavering with distance distortion and another spurt of static.
"They're useless now. Follow me."
And so Zephon led his servants through the trembling dark. Orestes, untrained in weaponry, walked with an air of forced calm, pretending not to hear his master's conversation. Shenkai was consumed with his burden, seemingly uninterested in Lan's recitations. Only Shafir openly listened. She shook her head with distaste at the Martian's commentary. Evidently she thought very little of Arkan Land.
"Where are you exactly?" Zephon asked the hololith at one point.
"Far above you, making ready to leave, Rezavi Bastion," Arkan replied, plainly distracted. "With one of the convoys making for the Sanctum Imperialis, along with everyone still possessing a modicum of sanity. But that's not what you really want to ask, is it? What's the question behind the question?"
He didn't want to say it. Even asking felt treasonous.
"Are we losing the war?"
Arkan Land laughed so hard that his hololithic image flickered with distortion. It wasn't long before Zephon came across the first of his dead kindred, a cousin rather than a brother, an imperial fist slumped against a corridor wall, his cracked armour overgrown with pulsating moss.
"Don't touch it!"
Land's voice crackled from ahead.
"He," Zephon murmured, "not it. Show some respect. This warrior gave his life for the Imperium."
He was watching the fleshy moss, how it pulsed with its own uneven heartbeat. As he stared, a crusty spread of the growth over the dead Space Marine's face swelled and slowly burst, birthing a flow of clumsy, blind spiders. The things were the colour of human flesh. They fought eyelessly, feasting on each other with stupid hate, bleeding human blood. Zephon stepped closer. Sensing his movement, several of the spiders reared at him, spreading their palps and forelegs in feral challenge, hissing and throwing up their discoloured guts. Zephon weaved aside from the sprays of intestinal acid, moving away without looking back. The servo skull projecting Arkan's image drifted ahead, pausing often to play its scanning web over the corridors and chambers of the abandoned bastion. There had been a battle here, and it was increasingly clear which side had claimed victory. The unburied dead lay everywhere. Uniforms marked most of them as Imperial Army, but not all. A great many were unarmed, wearing rags and robes. Pilgrims, civilians, refugees, families. Rounding a corner, the Blood Angel stared down a long corridor carpeted with the fallen. Blade wounds, saw wounds, showed on their flesh, declaring deaths that had seen them carved apart in their final moments. Several had sunk into the steel, somehow rotting into the walls and floor. Avoiding them would be impossible.
"Hurry up,"
said the hollow ghost, untroubled as it drifted several centimetres above the dead. Zephon walked over them, the weight of his armour pulping them beneath his tread, no matter how gentle he tried to be. He could hear his thralls struggling behind him. It was almost pitch black for them. They were relying on hand torches. But he was anything but human. He could see exactly where he was stepping and upon whom.
"I can. There are children here."
"Of course there are," said Land, drifting ahead. "Razavi Bastion's sublevels were a refugee holdout, and one of the last outside the Sanctum Imperialis."
"How did the enemy get down here?"
"They appeared. Manifested, you might say."
"I do not understand," Zephon admitted.
The servo skull turned in a slow arc, and the projected ghost offered a merciless gaze.
"Then you're in fine company," Lance said. "No one really knows what's happened since the ultimate wall fell. Everything has gone sour, Zephon. Hundreds of millions have died. We're all in the dark. They bombarded us from orbit. They leveled the plateau. Most of the inner palace is a wasteland of rubble. Communication between the bastions was unreliable for weeks and has been mostly down for days."
Zephon kept moving. He looked back at the others. They were close behind him. Land droned on, having found his conversational stride.
"Exoplanar Xenos are manifesting across the wasteland and inside the last bastions. The Omnisire's will no longer holds them back. We saw them in Sidoni Bastion at the end. Before we ran from there to reach Razavi, they burst from the dead. They pulled themselves out of the living. Soon enough it was happening down there too. It's happening everywhere. Blood of the machine god, the planet's crust is unstable, and the atmosphere is choked by dust. And this world is dying. Horus is killing Terra in his quest to take it."
There seemed nothing to say to that. With one hand on the wall for balance, Zephon moved on and tried not to tread on the fallen. Many of the bodies were in the process of some impossible cadaverous fusion, conjoined where their dead flesh touched. He saw bodies melded with the walls, curling fingers reaching out from the metal, half-formed faces shrieking silently from the steel. One of them asked him for help. He turned, seeing a cluster of cancers in the shape of a woman, a hive of tumours glued to the wall with its own corruption. It reached for him with shaky tenderness, as if to see if he was real.
"Please help me,"
it said again.
"Ignore it," Land said. "Ignore all of them. They think they're still people." "Don't leave me down here,"
the thing said. Where it had once had a mouth, a split in its lumpen head kept smearing open, showing 100 hairy teeth.
"Who are you?"
he asked it, fighting to show none of his unease.
"Jenna,"
the thing said, its tone like gargling gruel.
"Jenna Vernhalley. Please help me. Help my family. Don't leave us here."
It fell silent, hanging there, bleeding, rotting. Zephon recognised nothing human in the living malformation. He feared saying so would cause it yet more pain.
"I cannot help you, Jenna."
Though he could. He felt the weight of the pistol in his hands. It, she, suddenly laughed, the sound thick and wet.
"They have ranged the main line."
"Keep moving," Bland snapped. "Don't let it get inside your mind."
The thing, the woman, started to flow, her form dissolving into a slush that steamed as it ran down the wall.
"They have ranged the main line,"
she said through loosening teeth and a melting mouth.
"Son of Sanguineus, we see and hear through iron and stone and ash and dust. We know. We know. We know.
Zephon pulled the trigger. The remains of Genovernae decorated the wall in a sizzling pattern that behaved nothing like blood. Blood didn't dissolve metal. Blood didn't run like tar.
I believe I am somewhat more cognizant now of what threatens Terra, he said to Arkan's hollow ghost.
We shouldn't delay here, Master, said Shafir.
Yea, indeed, Lan said. Listen to the slaves. Keep moving.
And this time Zephon did.